This is the third tape with Molly Wexler, and the interview was carried out on January 5th, 1973. This interview was to begin to fill in some of the gaps in the previous interviews and covered the period particularly in Chicago following the birth of her first child. Specific questions were also asked about working conditions, living conditions, etc. Not all the details, which still seem to be missing, have been completed. The interview took place in Molly Wexler's apartment, as usual, but in the apartment below, some repair work was being done, and there was tremendous interference from hammering and other noises. We attempted on this tape to talk during the lulls in this activity, but ultimately it was necessary to cut short the interview. The next interview will continue to get some details that we have missed in the previous interviews. The interview begins at 25 on the digital counter.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you some specific questions today and fill in some of the gaps that I think I found on the tapes. For one thing, when you told the story about when you went to the non-union shop to organize, and then the foreman came up to you during the lunch hour, the one that we did on the TV, and they told you, you talk about getting your tools together. And I wanted you to describe for me, beginning in New York, actually, when you went for a job, what you had to do in terms of the tools you had to provide, if you had to pay for your own thread and bring your own thread, I wanted to describe all of that.
No, never, never. You just have to have a few tools, that's all. It depends on what machine you're working. Since there are Wilcox and Gibbs, different sort of tools. There's Singer Machine Companies, a different sort of tools. And if you haven't, you have to get it and work on that machine when you come out. But you don't buy thread or anything at all. Just your tools and machine.
And the tools were to make repairs or to change?
To change when you have to work certain parts of the work that you have to put on a certain foot that works less. And, you know, cording foot or buttonhole making or something like that. That's all. And a scissors. Was tape measure.
And you had to provide those?
Yes, yeah. That's the letter.
And if you went to a different place and they had a different kind of machine, you'd have to get it for that machine then?
Yes. Hmm. Definitely. If you accept it as a job, they give you for the few days that they're trying you out, or a week or so. And if you accept it, then you go and you get it. If you're not accepted, then you don't have to buy it. You have to look again for something.
Now, when you started, even in New York, though, you didn't have to pay for part of the electricity and all of that.
Because
I know earlier, for a while, people had to bring their own machines out.
Oh, well, that's way before me.
And then they had to pay for part of the electricity.
No, that was before I came to the United States. I found out about it when I came here.
Now, do you remember any of the details of what some of these shops were like, some of the factories, in terms of the conditions in them? Were they very cold in the winter, that sort of thing? Can you describe something about that?
Yes. They were very, in those early years in New York, very inconvenient. light wasn't good. They didn't have the neon lights yet. The machine didn't have the little neon light that they have now, if you know what I mean. Didn't have it. And wasn't cleaned, wasn't kept nice at all. All this added up to demanding the unionism, because under the union conditions you have to give comfort and making a living, the next most important. Yeah, that was that. It wasn't unionized yet when I came.
But once you got into union shops, the shops themselves were better?
Began to be improved, yeah.
And
I wouldn't say 100%, but it began to improve. Especially after the big fire, things started. I came after that, several years.
And did they, I know one of the problems in right around the time of the fire was that there weren't restrooms provided for women. Now, was this a problem too?
Yeah. That's right. Fairly primitive. Not all over, but still the majority. And the immigrants that came from various parts of the world couldn't complain too much because they didn't know anything better. We didn't have it at home at all. We didn't even know it was in existence. You wouldn't believe it, would you? No bathrooms, no toilets, no water, no water running, nothing. So when we came, naturally we fitted in. But those that were here prior are already beginning to organize and beginning to tell us what we're entitled to, what we should have, and naturally we agreed very much. Not 100% of all of everybody, but this is what we call organizing, letting people understand. Right? Like we began to find out and think about unemployment, a lot of people didn't know what that meant. Why should anybody pay us? But it takes years.
Now, when you would go to, say, beginning in New York, you would have to be at work at what time in the morning?
8 o'clock.
At 8. And then there were no breaks or anything, were there?
No, no.
So yeah. how did the day go in terms of when you got out for lunch and how long that was? And how did that
Oh, go? About a half hour before unionism. A half hour. We'd stop at 12 o'clock and have something to eat and then go right back to work. And then break till 5, 6 o'clock.
And you'd eat in the shop there?
Lunch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, not evening,
yeah.
Just lunch. Come after breakfast and take lunch along with you. Because in a half hour you can't go out in a restaurant and you can't afford it. So take along something and sit together and eat tea. Half hour. No breaks, no anything.
Now, when you first started, you were making $4 a week. Now, do you remember how much things cost then? Like, how did you have to spend the $4 in terms of living and being able to
It was just about $3 a week you paid for woman board. But woman board means that you had a little bite for breakfast and they give you something along in the evening too. And a dollar a week you had for your coffee, which was just a nickel coffee. So 5 cents, you traveled all over New York, no matter where.
So you had just another 50 cents left for 4 weeks?
Yeah, that's right. But you couldn't, of course, the event of movie was also a nickel. Saturday afternoon, a nickel show. That's the movie was called a nickel show. You wouldn't believe it, would you?
Well, I can remember.
For a nickel, I saw the best place, Shakespeare, you name it. Yeah. In a nickel cafe. So the rest closed, of course, we made the ourselves, one helped the other.
And what were the living conditions like?
Very bad. Very, very bad. I slept kind of, it's sort of a little bed that you put up in the living room, family, and covered the door and that's it.
And how many people were in the...
In the room? I myself there. Yeah. But the family had their bedroom and their dining room and everything. But it took him somebody for a few dollars extra. Right. That's my 7th state, near ABC, New York, this side.
Mm-hmm. And was this in what would be considered a tenement building?
Yes, It's like you're building already ahead of a toilet room, not a bedroom, but it was in the hallway on each floor, in everybody mutual, women and men, nothing in the apartment. That was already a progress. That's right. If you have to take a bed, you have to go pay for a quarter. Special bed, bed house.
And then when you lived in Cleveland, you lived with your brother?
Yes.
Oh, and in Chicago, you lived with your brother
too? Yeah, for a while until I got married.
Mm.
That's right.
So, but the whole time in New York, you lived with this, after you were in that house?
Yeah, not in that house alone. Then we got acquainted, and a few girls would take our room together in a better place. Because if you leave two or three in one room, naturally you can pay $10 a month rent already, and it's easier, and you make your own use. So after about 8 months or close to a year, I met some people that I worked with, kitchen girls, and they put them all staying in the room together.
And how much did that cost, do you remember?
$10 a month.
And there was, what, three?
But the two of us. No, we just took two. The other apartment, there were three of them, but we lived two of us.
So that left you more spending money?
Yeah. And then they get a little bit of a raise sometimes, a dollar a bit more, so.
Now, when you started in New York, did you have half holidays on Saturday?
Yeah, they didn't work Saturday. Oh. Unless it was very busy.
You didn't work at all?
No.
Oh. So you worked a 5 day week?
5 day week.
And about 9 hours a day, something like that?
8, 9 hours a day, yeah, that's right. And if it was very busy, we worked overtime.
Did you get paid for overtime?
A little bit, yeah, just a little bit. Not all over, but some of them that were more generous did it. We got it.
Now, when the shop became unionized, were the hours cut down to?
Yes.
To how many hours?
8. Straight 8 hours.
So it was a 40-hour week then?
Yeah. And then, didn't take too long, and they were fighting for a 25-hour week. But that was already some years of it. In Chicago, we began to work 35-hour week.
Oh, you actually began to work at 35-hour week?
Yeah.
Now, were there fights when the hours were reduced? Were there fights over the bosses trying to reduce the wages too?
No. He couldn't, because he didn't go back. Because they were reduced already by union. See, that's it. But there were other troubles too. People that came from very primitive places would work piece work or something. And the more hours, the more piece work you give out. And they didn't want to live up to us. They would hide, and then when we'd go away, they'd go back to work. They would sit and work, and found that out too.
Oh, after
that was before the
union.
Oh. That's right. Yeah. And then they began to take work home too.
Now, when did they stop taking work home? About when was that? Do you recall?
Oh, it would be in about the late 30s.
Oh, I didn't realize that went on that long. Now, the union would try and prevent people from taking
much,
work home.
Yes, very much.
So these were people who would work in non-union shops.
That's
who
right.
Take work.
Yeah. They would be ready to skate anytime, any place.
Now, were among the immigrant workers themselves, would people in that group scab, or were they mainly other people? Who were the scabs usually?
The scabs were the immigrants that were very, that came here specially because they wanted to make money and they didn't care for idealism or time or anything. A lot of them Italian, Mexican, and I would say quite some of them Jewish too.
Mm.
Not as many, but I met them. And they wanted to make money, that's all. They didn't want to hurt us or anything. They just wanted to make more money. Because some of them had children, some of them bought a little house or whatever it is, and so they did it.
Now, was there pressure in the Jewish ghetto against people stabbing?
Yes, very much. Could even go to their homes. Some got beaten up too. Because their husbands were also scared in places. Mm. It's very hard to penetrate them. Very hard.
Now, were these usually the newer immigrants?
Yes, that's right. The newest, not the first. They just, it didn't penetrate them. From what I learned, it didn't penetrate them that they're doing anybody wrong. If you don't want to work, go and find what you're looking. I want to work and I'm finding what I have. That's what they answered me. They're not taking it away from me. You went out of your job. So I took it. There was a lack of, it's still, you believe it or not, still out. The last ones were scabbing was in 1960. For Helen Rose, here, right here, on Jefferson Boulevard. I went and spoke to them. They couldn't listen to me. If you want to be an idealist, go ahead. I don't make a life by living up our ideals.
Now, when you would try and organize a shop, to be a union shop, did you ever have any trouble where the majority of the people in the shop would then say they don't want a union shop?
That's right.
And what would happen then?
Well, we just quieten down for a little while and then continue again various ways. Try to penetrate them. And little by little, they would begin to understand. After we prove them, we took them and show them how people get the sick benefit, how they get in a union shop. And, well, they began to think maybe they're right. That's how it got to be organized.
So the struggle, it sounds, from listening to the tape, from our talking, that the struggle was greatest organizing the people themselves rather than the fighting against the employers.
Yes, yes, that's right. Because if the majority of the people would understand, the employer would have to give up. He can't make business looking at the walls. He has to have them. So first they have to be ready that if the boss says no, we are not going to work for you. So if they were ready, and the boss knew, if he went around to find out, he gave up. That's right. The struggle was with the workers first.
Now, were you involved in any lockouts?
Oh, yeah.
Can you remember anything about those?
Yes, I remember that he said that the boss, after he saw that he's in trouble, that he's going to make a smaller place. And he doesn't want certain people. That's it. He didn't say because they're no good, or because maybe the other workers wouldn't like it. They're all friendly, but he just can't keep us all. So he picked out, including me, and told us to get out of there.
And what happened then?
And that happens very bad too, because if you get out, locked out, and you got to go for another job, the first thing you ask for a new job is the reference. And you couldn't give the reference after you were locked out, you knew why. So you would go around the longest time without jobs. That's in trouble. Until the union undertook that, never mind lockout. You'll either close your business or keep the people.
What happened with this lockout? The other people didn't react at all?
No. Mm-hmm. No. That's right.
And the union couldn't take people out on strike then?
No, not exactly, because they weren't prepared yet. The people didn't know yet what it means being taken out on strike. They had to be a little bit educated, more or less, in their own language even. And so it took quite a number of years to reach that.
Now, in terms of the language, I wanted to ask you. You used Yiddish most of the time organizing.
Yeah.
Now, was that in Chicago, too?
In Chicago was already a little bit in English, too, in a broken English. Like when they arrested me, and I didn't know what injunction means. But in New York, Yiddish. In Chicago, mostly, but about 50% I taught Yiddish.
So in Chicago, most of the women were still Jewish immigrants.
Yeah.
Born
yeah.
in the Negro trade.
Yeah. Even if some came from various parts of the country that I came from, I spoke their language a little bit, Russian. So I remember meeting a group of people and speak Russian to them and make them understand.
So then there would be Italian women who would be organizing?
Yeah, would be organizing. Yeah. There weren't as many Mexicans as they had in the last years. But most of them were Italian and Russian and Polish, very many Polish.
Oh, in Chicago especially?
Yes.
Now, were those workers harder to organize, the Polish and the Italian workers?
Yes. They didn't come here, they said, to become unionized or anything. They came here because it's a free country. We were told that it's the freest country in the world. We're still told. And they want to make money. They want to bring over their family. Everybody had somebody left over that wanted to bring over. So it was very hard to reach them.
Now, the strikes that you were involved in, you talked about the one in L.A., the Helen Rose one. Do you remember other strikes in Chicago?
Oh, yes.
Can you tell me something about some of those?
This is there where I was arrested. That's the big strike in Chicago where the policeman told me that the injunction and then I was arrested. That was a big strike, took a long time. And there was another strike on Highland Avenue there that we lost and the place closed up. He moved out of the city.
But this was you were actually working there?
Yes.
And how did the strike start and everything?
Well, we began to feel that he's not paying us enough. And they're working off their half. And in other places that don't make such a good line, make better money than it. So they elect a committee. And they go and they talk to the manufacturer or two of them or whatever. And they said, no, if you don't want you, we'll take other people. So we went out on strike. We told the union that was already organizing. We went out on strike and we didn't let in other people. We were just covering all around. It took the longest time, but we didn't always win.
And how long did that strike last?
About 6 weeks.
And then they moved out of the city?
Yes.
How many people were involved in that strike, do you remember?
There must have been about 40 of us, yeah. Including the men's department and everything, yeah. About 40.
And everyone went out there?
Some of them that went out didn't stay on strike. They go out and they look for another job. Quite a number of them. For various reasons. Those that stay are the ones that really make it a union. Now, that's what we organized.
That strike was actually where you were working?
Yes.
Was the one with the injunction, you weren't working there, you weren't
no,
to help work.
That's right.
Were there any others besides the Helen Rose then and this that where you were working and you went out?
In here?
Or in Chicago?
In Chicago? Yes.
Do you remember what happened with those?
We won. He settled with a new manufacturer. Real new. He just started and he began to do very nice. Quite an artistic type of a man. He did his own designing and he talked it over and it didn't take too long. He didn't settle.
How long were you out on that one?
About 2 weeks. In fact, I wasn't working there. I was sent there to help out. And he wanted me, but I was in the committee to talk things over with him and everything. So then he asked us to stay and I remained there. I worked there forever.
Oh.
I became a union shop.
Where had you been working at that time?
I was working in another place and it was a union shop. And I just took off. But I liked the way he behaved. So I stayed back there. That was a very good experience. We were very well off there.
When was that? Do you remember when that was?
That must have been about in the late 20s. About 1920, after the big strike in 1920, the small places. Must have been about 1926 or 1927, yeah, around that. Yeah. The place was called Lone Cow. Around Glenbion Street, near Market. That's the section, the dressmaking section. Yeah. I got the whole section dressmaking sent before me.
The elbow's right by there.
Yes.
Now, you, the first convention you went to was, you went to a convention in...
Yeah, in Boston, in Massachusetts.
And when that?
That must be in the meeting that I gave you.
I don't think they showed
that. Yes, they showed.
I know there was one in Chicago, I think in 1920 or so. And the picture that you were in showed a group of Chicago people who helped with the community.
Yeah. That was Chicago. Yeah, that was before I went out of the state to another convention.
Now, what was the convention? That was your first convention then, the one in Boston?
Yeah.
And how did you happen to go?
The union asks, they may have people that are better fit, but they can't get away. Not all women could get away. Some had children, somebody's sick in the house or something, so they apply to somebody, and I suggested that I'd like to have to go. The union sent us.
And they paid your way then?
Yes.
And what, do you remember anything about the convention?
Yes. I remember, but President Schlesinger was that time, Arthur Ochman was the Vice President, Julius Ginsburg went, the manager of the union in Chicago, still alive there, with him, and it was taking up the questions of how to improve the places that are not unionized yet, and how to improve those that are unionized and are not living up to their discussions, and it's very interesting.
How many women were at the convention? Were there many women?
Yes. Many. I can't remember how many exactly.
But were there many women as men?
Yes. Yeah. Quite a number of them. I think the pictures are there too, the convention. It's very nice.
How did you feel, in looking through the pictures and reading some of the union history now, it's apparent that all the leadership was always men.
Yes.
Even though the union was almost three-quarters women.
No. That's right.
How did you feel about the fact that...
Nothing. Because it's a matter of fact. I don't remember ever reaching to me anything. They weren't discussing it, they weren't talking. They took it for granted that the men are the stronger personalities. And it's to them that will reach somewhere. So they admire, they appreciate it. All of them. The only women that took top jobs is in a group of factory. They had to elect a chair lady. And we couldn't find a man to be a chairman because very few men worked in the dressmaking. They wanted to. So that was a big thing. But otherwise, all the jobs were kept by men.
Now, how about in Chicago, there was a joint board, I think it was called.
Yes.
From all the different locals.
Locals, yeah.
Were there women on that joint board?
No. Occasionally, they would substitute somebody, but no.
And at no time did the women ever think?
Never. Never discussed, never talked about nothing. Just praising the men that do so much for us. Being lucky that they do, that they take our interests in their mind. Very, very natural.
Because in looking through, you see, I have figures that like three-quarters of the women, of the people in the union were women. And you never hear about them because the men were the ones who were the leaders.
Of course. Sure. If you were elected, if you were nominated in a meeting for a certain position in the union of some kind, you would come in to be interviewed. There wouldn't be one woman sitting there. I mean, a group of men sitting interviewing. In the interview, in the approach, you would feel a certain rejection or belittling, if you know. But I mean, I still feel it now. I would look around, how am I going to win? And we didn't win. That's right. How it build up, suppose it comes a time, but it takes too long. Just to realize, that's all.
Because, did you ever encounter someone named Rose Pizzotta in L.A.?
Rose Pizzotta.
she apparently, I think it was before you came here, it sounds like it was in about 1933, came and was one of the people really responsible for organizing the locals in L.A. She came, she worked here, and then she went back to New York and proposed that she was going to organize it. And she finally later, I think in 1940 or so, they wanted her, the women wanted her to run for vice president. There had only been two other women who had ever been on the board, the national board, and she finally won. I think she was the third woman who had ever been one of the leaders.
Yeah. Still, men, older, it goes through history. If you look in, this is it. But the women walk up, I would say, quite a bit. Yeah. Really did.
Now, the really big gap is the big gap in the listening to the tapes was between the biggest gap is between 1922 when you came back from your trip to California to when you left Chicago. I wasn't too clear about details in there at all.
Then I left Chicago?
Yeah, between when you came back, that it was almost 12 years, I guess, when you came back from California to Chicago.
I came to California in 1921. And I stayed almost, not quite, almost a year. And I came back to Chicago before the end of 1922.
And then when you came back to Chicago, you went to work where?
Right away on a job. Yeah.
And where?
It was on State Street. You remember where the Boston store was? In the basement of the Boston store was a big press section, and I went to work there.
Oh. And was that a union check?
No. It was not a union check.
And then
they wanted me to go there.
Oh, the union wanted you to
yes.
go there. And what happened at that shop then?
I was there for quite a while, and then we went to the union shop. We didn't have trouble.
How large was that?
Bigger shop. Yeah, this was quite big. I don't remember exactly how many machines. But it's quite a big shop. Yeah. Must have been about 60 or over 60 people working there. It was called Big that time.
Yeah. And how, you were there for how long?
I was there till about before 24, my daughter was being born. I was 6 months pregnant while I was still working. And then I took off. And I stayed home for a little while, and then I took in somebody in the house to take care of her. And by 1926, I went back to work, not in the same shop.
Okay, so then in 1926, so for 2 years, right after she was born, you didn't work at all?
No. Almost 2 years, yes.
And then in 1926, you went back to work?
Yeah.
And where did you work then?
In a store. I did handwork. Yeah, I didn't want to travel. I wanted to be close by. So I worked in a store and did some alteration work and dressmaking a little bit. In a dress shop. It's not a factory, but a store that does some helping in the area there.
And
yeah, I worked there. You
worked full time there?
Yes, full time.
And the woman would stay with
you? She stayed with me all the time.
Oh, she lived in with you?
Yes.
Oh, I see.
Yes.
Okay.
That's right.
So then you worked in this, you worked full time in this
yes.
store.
That's right.
For how long was that?
Oh, till 19, almost 28. A little over there. And then I stopped again and I gave her to my son. He was born 1929, she was born 1924.
Then after.
And the woman was still with me.
Then after he was born.
I stayed for a little while and I went back to work.
And when did you go back to work then?
About 1931.
And you went to work
1931. UNESCO also, another story. He moved in the neighborhood and there's a very fancy South Shore road. And 71st near Carriage Road. Very exclusive store. There I did also feeding and operation. There I worked until I left.
Until 1934?
Until 1935. I left Chicago 1935, June 24th.
Now, before your husband left for the Soviet Union, was he living with the family?
Yes.
So until he left?
Well, when I moved away to California, he was still in Chicago.
Oh, I see.
After that he left. He was getting ready to leave when I moved away to California.
Now, when I kept forgetting to ask you, you said when you moved to one of the reasons you moved to Chicago was that you met a young man there. Now, was this him?
That's right.
Okay.
Right.
Now, while you were working, he was going to school?
That's right.
And when did he finish school?
1921, the beginning of 1921, that's why I went to California. I took my education.
Now, the woman who lived with you, she lived with you the whole beginning 1924 and straight up to when you left and came to California.
She came with me. She died here. She came right with me.
Now, did you find it difficult working and trying to raise a family,
yes,
though?
Yes, yes.
What kind of problems did you have?
Well, it was in my mind that certain things that I'm not taking care of the right way, I don't give them enough time. And yeah, it was quite hard. And sometimes children are not well, and you have to take off from work and see what you can do. It was a very, very hard thing. But I kept it up.
Now, in those years, do you remember how much you were making?
In which years?
Say 1926 to 1928, at that first shop after your daughter was born.
I was working this week.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And about what would you average a week?
Oh, about $18-$20.
And then after your son was born in
1931, I was making about $35 a week, which was the highest of everybody ever heard of, because it was the height of depression. But this was a very exclusive store, and they paid me very well.
Were there other women working there, or were you the only?
The sales ladies in the store, but the alteration, just two more that I helped out.
I see.
They were young girls. And I taught them how to do the thing, because I love feeding, they did the sewing, pressing.
Now, once your husband finished school, did he earn a living, or were you still mainly supporting the family?
When he finished school, I didn't have children yet. And so I went away to California for a trip, and he found himself to work with somebody until he went in by himself. When I came back in 1922, he was already in my office, sharing the office with a doctor, a medical doctor and a dentist, the two offices together.
But it was necessary for you to work in terms of the money?
Yeah, because our office, the supplies and everything for dentists is very expensive. You know, to pay that.
So during the Depression, was he making any money, or you were making most of the money then?
I was making it.
And do you remember how much of what you made did you have to pay the woman who was living with you?
I paid her $8 a week. Can you believe it?
And then she had room and board.
Of course. She took care of everything. I don't think I would be able to tell the story if not for her. She's somebody to remember.
Then once you came to California, did she live with you in,
yes,
California?
Yes.
Oh, for how long?
By the beach, 2 years, about 2 years, till about 1939, about 3 years, yeah. And then the children were already in school, and decided that we'll try to get along. So I gave away to somebody that I met. He should work there.
Now, so once the children were in school, though, while you were working, that must have been very difficult.
Very difficult. Some I would send them a day to attend all summer. Make arrangements before school closes, and then they go away to attend. And they are out of the working circle. Yeah, all summer long. And then get along the best they knew how, which was very hard. So I moved back to the city, because when I came, I lived by the ocean and Alpha Avenue. And to the city, so it would be easier for me to keep in touch, neighbors or somebody of the best. But they grew up there,
wonderful. Now that must have, you must have had to spend almost all the money you made then, just to support.
And more sometimes. I'd be taking work at home too.
Oh, really?
Definitely.
In?
Not from the factory.
Yeah.
In the neighborhood. That's right.
This was when you were in L.A.?
Yes.
In Chicago, did you do that
too? No. Taking work to make extra money, because they demanded books and things, and they were inclined to want education, and I wouldn't naturally not deprive them of it. Until they got a little bit old enough to help out, which they did.
Once they were in high school?
My daughter went into City College under a month. She applied, talked to the counselor. She was very young, but she was a very good student, but she could give time to help out. And they took her into the office to read the papers, the student that came in to mark the papers. So she worked in the study. And then she went back to university to Berkeley. She worked as a night telephone operator. She would do her homework and then out there, like she also said, that didn't supply for everything she needed, but it helped quite a bit.
Now, in most of the places that you lived, most of your life, your friends revolved around the Union or around other groups?
Union, most.
And I know in some places the Union ran like a school. You didn't learn English at one of the Union schools?
No, not the Union school. Regular schools, city schools.